Hey friends, and welcome to the Hashtag Music Ed Love podcast. We are thrilled to reach so many music educators and future music teachers here on our show. Today, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Director of Music Education and Associate Professor at George Mason University, Dr. Charles Chuck Ciorba. Prior to joining the faculty at George Mason University, Dr. Ciorba was Associate Professor and Coordinator of Graduate Music Education at the University of Oklahoma. He also served as Assistant Professor of Music Education at Millikan University. Before that, as a public school teacher, Dr. Ciorba was able to create an innovative and comprehensive music curriculum in the areas of general and instrumental music with an emphasis on educational technology. Dr. Ciorba is an active researcher specializing in jazz improvisation achievement, self-perception, and performance assessment. Dr. Ciorba strives to help music educators develop innovative curricula that can be effectively used to teach the art of jazz improvisation to their students. Dr. Ciorba has presented national, international conferences, and has articles published pretty much all over. This summer, Dr. Ciorba will present his latest study as a full paper presentation at the International Society for Music Education World Conference in Helsinki, Finland. So cool! The title of that paper is The Creation and Validation of a Jazz Theory Measure. I myself have actually had the pleasure of getting to know Dr. Ciorba over this past year and can attest to his passion for music education and music teacher education, his ability to light a fire under pretty much anyone, and his enthusiasm for jazz education. I'm extremely grateful for his mentorship and friendship, and I know that you will gain so much from listening to The Jazz Cat on Improvisation. Yay, we have a working system.
Beautiful.
Okay, we are here with Dr. Chuck Ciorba at George Mason University for our episode on jazz. And I might title this something like The Jazz Cat at George Mason, because I was recently looking you up, like I do, you know, in preparation. And one of the students, you have great reviews on like Rate My Professor. And one of the students said, I love Dr. Ciorba, he's a jazz cat. And it was... And I just loved that for this episode. I thought that was really, really a fun way to describe you. And I'd never heard that before. So.
I have read that.
You have read that.
I did read that review. And I'm just very fortunate that at Mason, up until now, they've been very kind. Because that's not always the case, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, they're not always. But those reviews were great. And that's always good to see.
Great.
The students obviously really like you. And they commented at what a great addition it's been since you've been here, which I would agree.
Wonderful.
Having gone to Mason for my master's, it's just I've really seen the music ed program grow,
mm-hmm.
Not only in size but in confidence, which is really exciting. You know, the kids are coming out more confident and ready to teach, so pretty
wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
So we're here to talk a little bit about jazz improv, and
yeah.
I have to tell you, okay, so when I was in middle school, I loved music, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and I played piano and violin, and I loved our band director, but I wasn't in band, you know, ever.
Right.
And he started up a jazz band,
right.
And I thought, can I be in the jazz band? And I thought, as a string player, probably not. But then at some point, I don't know if I told somebody or he recruited me, but I ended up getting to play piano in his jazz band.
Great.
And it was so much fun because he was such a great teacher. I was terrible at jazz. That's my impression. I felt like I was so bad, but I loved him and never once did he treat me like I was bad. That was just, you know, me as a musician knowing that I wasn't quite as good as other people. So I'm excited to kind of learn how I can do more with jazz, even being a novice, certainly. So I guess the first question, really, for those of us that are not familiar with jazz, what is jazz improv?
Jazz improvisation, it's a great question, and it's like any other form of improvisation. You are basically playing a musical solo on the spot by adhering to the parameters of a given performance, whether it's a complex bebop piece, whether it's a modal piece, whether it's free jazz, but basically you're playing on the spot and it is dependent on your knowledge base. So you have experienced improvisers who can get up in stage with this full, wide knowledge base, a lifetime of playing, and they can just rip off these wonderful, inspiring solos. But then when you hear a middle school jazz band and it's time to solo, you have these poor middle school kids with this very limited knowledge base. And of course, you're going to hear a clumsily executed solo. So that has been my passion ever since joining the PhD program many years ago, is to sort of isolate variables and figure out how to teach and learn the art of jazz improvisation. So to answer your question, improvisation is basically playing a solo on the spot while adhering to the parameters of the given musical performance.
Okay, okay, great. That makes a lot of sense. And as someone that was trained kind of with ORF, I was trained primarily in general music, actually, way back in the day. We do so much improvisation with young children.
Yes.
But I have found that it's so hard for me to transfer that same mentality to middle school. So I'm really interested in how you go about, you know, getting the students to play something that sounds good. And like you said, that they feel successful with, that's not too clumsy, you know?
Exactly. And it's a matter of keeping in a realm of their ability. I've heard many high school bands with these great band directors, and these big bands come across with a great ensemble sound, and they're cooking, and they sound absolutely wonderful. And then it's time to hit the solo, and you know, you see the chord symbols and the railroad tracks and the staff, and all of a sudden they're supposed to match that ensemble sound. It's too much. How do you do it at that level is to, well, number one, if you want to teach jazz improvisation, know your theory. And this is one of the variables I isolated in my dissertation and future research, and even anecdotal information. I once watched an interview of Miles Davis in Japan in the mid-1980s. It was a great interview. He was in a relatively good mood, and he was telling some great stories. But the interviewer asked, "How do you do it? How do you improvise?" And his answer was, "Know your theory. If the music calls you to play a flat 9 chord, know how to play a flat 9 chord. Know your theory, first and foremost." And I think this is what catches the band directors off guard, because they're great conductors, but they don't feel comfortable with jazz because they've never done it. Mm-hmm. But they've been through the theory program, right?
Yes.
And so teach the theory. Make sure the kids know what to do. And then picking the appropriate music. If I was working with a group of high school students, I'd start off with something simple, maybe some 12-bar blues.
Okay.
Or something modal. And the modal pieces are really great because, you know, you're playing one chord or one mode for 8 or 16 measures. But with that, they have to learn how to phrase. So they divide it into 2-measure, 4-measure phrases. So by the time they're done with that particular phrase, they know it's time for a chord change. I've worked with elementary students with recorders, and I pull out, I believe it's volume 57 of the Ebersole book, The Dominant Seventh Workout. And I forgot what track it is, but I believe it's G Dominant Seventh. And it's got a nice contemporary rhythm section with it. And I just teach them, play the root and play the seventh, lowered seventh, and that's it. And then you got these young children on recorders trading fours going down the line, and they're just playing some wonderful music. They have 2 notes, very easy, and while the other kids are playing, they're formulating what they're going to do in their head, and it actually comes out quite nice.
Wow.
That goes well, then guess what? Give them the third.
Yeah.
And keep adding. I've worked with high school jazz bands where they don't want to solo. They're afraid to solo. So I'm like, okay, we're at the solo section. Everybody solo. So I have the whole section soloing at the same time. It's a matter of getting them in their comfort zone and giving them changes or parameters that are comfortable for them. And setting up an environment where they're not going to get emotionally destroyed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the idea of having them all solo at the same time.
All solo at the same time.
You know, as somebody that's like a jazz novice, to me, that's, I can do that. I would feel okay doing that, you know? And then where do you go after that?
Well, then we could go down the line. Okay. You know, okay, let's go down the line. Everybody take four. Everybody take eight. Whatever. And those who still aren't comfortable, I did this at Fairfax High School, I believe almost 2 years ago to the day, when Kyle Harrington was there. And a couple of them, no, I still don't want to do it. I'm like, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
So are you, those who are comfortable, let's start going down the line and just start listening to each other. But I like to start with the theory. And that's not the only secret. I mean, when you get into improvisation, you're looking at licks, you're looking at motives, you're looking at structure, you're looking at phrasing, then you do have the inspiration where it all comes out. But from my perspective and what I've isolated in my research, start with the theory. Make sure they know what notes they can play.
Great.
Yeah.
So just to break it down, first of all, taking fours is taking four measures at a time.
Playing four measures at a time.
Okay. Right. You said taking fours, and I was like,
playing, yeah, trading.
I don't
fours.
Know that trading fours. Trading that's the fours. Term you use. Yeah. I thought, I don't know what that means. But see, even me, as a you know, colleague of yours now, I'm afraid to ask that question, which is funny. But so now, trading fours is four measures. Trading eights is eight measures, essentially.
Correct.
Is that right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And while they're doing that, the rest of the ensemble, are they repeating a section? Are they doing an ostinato?
It all depends on how you structure it. Of course, if you're working on the 12-bar blues, you just keep going through the form.
Okay.
You know?
Sure. No, that makes complete sense.
Absolutely.
So when you go to teach, and I'm just going super basics, I'm thinking about our teachers that just never have done jazz, which is many of us, you know,
all
unfortunately.
All of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you put the chords on the board, I'm assuming, and kind of go through the actual music theory of what notes are in the chords.
Absolutely.
Is that where you go? Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Great.
They know it on the board, on the sheet. And one of the tricks is let them know they don't have to play every note. I remember when I first started improvising, I got a G dominant seventh chord. I must play every note.
Yes.
Before, no.
Yes.
No, you don't. So knowing the theory, but also trying to play musically from the start. You know, trying to sound musical instead of meandering.
And how do you give them an example of musical versus a meandering, little?
Absolutely.
You give them an example. Okay.
Well, and the second variable I did isolate through research, self-assessment.
Yes. Okay.
Self-assessment. And, you know, I learned this at a very young age. When I was 16 or 17, I was playing in a wedding band. Yes, the age of the wedding bands. And I remember one night we had a gig, and it wasn't a wedding. It was some kind of event. And the first set, we were just playing dinner music, okay? And it was interesting. Our drummer decided to bring a cassette deck and plug it into the mixing board. Yes, a cassette deck, which is a system that allows you to record and play music, right? And he hooked it in to the mixing board, and we played our first set. And we hit our break, and I'm like, give me the headphones. I want to hear this. And I was absolutely amazed. We sounded really good. We had a nice sound for our small group.
Yeah.
Tone, everything was together, and it just hit me. You can play and play and play for years and have no idea what you sound like until you hear a recording of yourself. So I do this going into my research, was I have to put self-assessment in as a variable.
Yes.
So what I recommend to the band directors, the music teachers, the choir directors, everybody out there, teach the theory and set up a structured curriculum where students are recording themselves and listening back. You know, give them a rubric.
Yeah.
You know, separate style, technique, everything there, and where are they deficient? Where do they need work?
That's great.
Absolutely.
That assessment piece is really key too. So when you're first teaching them, do you offer some kind of assessment after they play their solos? Like if you're going kind of down the line?
Sure. You know, I'm pretty easygoing to start. You know, I've worked with some good teachers myself, and, you know, it's constructive.
Okay.
constructive. What they can do, work on the phrasing. I'll have students, they're just hitting the wrong note. I say, no, that calls for an A flat, not an A natural. Do something. Yeah. Give them some assessment, give them some pointers. The fact of the matter is, when you're teaching music, whether it's jazz improv or anything, assessment is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Assessment can be a very good thing.
Yeah.
And with today's technology, students assessing themselves, it's a wonderful tool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's so key in all of our ensembles. And I don't think we do it enough because I know we're so busy. That's part of it, is that it feels like it takes up so much time.
Absolutely.
So I think I skipped quite ahead in my questions. But
it's okay.
One big question I have is, who is jazz improvisation for, in your opinion? Like, who can teach it? What do they need to be able to teach it, you know?
It's for everybody. Jazz is for everybody. And for the teachers, you know, it's tough in the music ed programs because, you know, at Mason we are unique. We're one of the few universities that still keep our curriculum to 120 credit hours.
That is unique.
We're not going overboard. Yeah. And it's tough. You know, they have to take their general ed classes. They have to take their methods classes. And let us not forget oral skills and theory and piano, everything, the gamut. And where do you fit in a jazz curriculum?
Right.
Jazz takes a lifetime to learn. So... And then you get these teachers who didn't learn it, these students who didn't learn it in high school, and what, I'm supposed to cover it in 6 weeks? You know?
Right.
So it's very hard. But they have taken some theory. They've taken 4 semesters of theory. I like to light a fire. I like to light a fire under them. Explain jazz. Explain what it's all about. Pull out your instrument. I have a simple piece of music here. Let's play along. I'll teach them just like I would teach high school students.
Great.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I say, we're not even getting deep in the curriculum or anything with our conversation here, but it's just, how do we get started?
Yeah, I think that is, you know? Right.
And back when I was in college, you're a music ed major, well, then you're going to play classical.
That's correct.
And they made it so difficult. So I go to my applied teacher, no, you're going to take classical lessons. Mm. And, well, gee, I want to play in the jazz ensemble. Well, the schedule wouldn't always allow for it. And I just found it absolutely frustrating. When I did go back to school in the mid-90s, I said, that's it. I'm going to learn jazz. Mm-hmm. And I befriended a couple people in Detroit who were musicians. And I was turned on to Lee Morgan.
Okay.
And I was told to buy Kind of Blue. And I really heard John Coltrane for the first time. And I've just been weaving in and out of it for many years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. I think I get concerned about our emphasis on classical music.
Sure.
And I know for me, for the longest time, as a string player, I ignored the fact that I love bluegrass. I love bluegrass. And for years, I was a closet bluegrass lover.
Be unashamed.
Now I'm unashamed.
Okay.
But I was truly ashamed because there is such an emphasis on classical music.
Yeah, and those bluegrass musicians, aren't they great?
They're amazing.
They're amazing.
But I will tell you, as a classically trained musician, now that I try to play bluegrass, I understand the theory.
Yeah.
I understand how to improvise in general, right?
Right.
But I have been told that I'm the most Vivaldi fiddler people have heard. But it's a start, right?
It's a start.
So as a student,
yes.
You know, trying to get to more improvisation, perhaps not in the jazz field, but, you know, where do you go for those students that are so tight?
Right.
In their playing style, because that's, especially like marching band students, I think there's a very real tendency to just be very boxy in our playing.
Well, listen to recordings of yourself.
Okay.
And listen to good jazz.
Yeah.
And, you know, the outlets out there are absolutely amazing. I found the Jazz Band Masterclass here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, cool.
And all of a sudden, Jeff Antoniak, a wonderful, brilliant mind and a wonderful musician, but here I am. I found a group of amateurs and semi-pros that I rehearse with in Northwest D.C. every other week.
Wow.
We're playing gigs, and I'm actually playing with people. And so just do it.
Yeah.
That's my advice to them. Just do it.
Yeah.
And young people, teenagers, adolescents, their minds, they are just, they're working, you know, they're just firing those neurons off, and they learn quick and they learn fast. We have a young 15-year-old, maybe he's 16 in our group right now, Jordan. He's absolutely wonderful. He just made it to the, he's the lead alto player in the Maryland All-State Jazz Group right now. And we had a rehearsal on Tuesday night, and he's just absolutely amazing. And I always have to play after him. So, but the great part about it is I'm be inspired.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Do it for yourself.
I love this so much. So you're playing in this group with a 15-year-old.
Absolutely.
And you have no problem with this, which I think is
great.
Awesome.
No, I'm learning from him.
Great.
Yeah. That's
something I think, I know as undergrads, our students struggle with often, this idea of, what if the students are better than me?
So what?
So what?
You know, throw the ego out the window.
I love
you
that.
You know, do it for yourself. And fun, great things happen at that point, because I've been doing this for a year, and I'm playing with people, and I'm getting better.
Yes.
You know, and I make no aspersions about who I am. I'm no high level anything. I just enjoy it. And if I can continue to improve and grow and develop and keep it social, it's wonderful.
Well, and what a great example that sets for your students.
Absolutely.
You know, to know that you're playing because you genuinely love it. And I think that's something that we need to continue, not that this is totally a jazz thing, but just in general, this message that you play music because you love it, not because you're good at it.
Right?
Not because you're the best or you're aspiring to be a professional musician.
Sure.
You do it because you love it, right?
Lifelong music makers.
Yes.
And I feel I know we lead busy lives as teachers, but I believe music teachers should continue to play. At least that's my belief.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. Okay, sorry. Where's my question? So improvisation is a huge part of our curriculum today, but I find that many people struggle to figure out how to fit it into their daily schedule. So I have kind of two questions. One, why is it so, so, so important that the kids learn to improvise? And two, how do they go about fitting that into what feels to me like a very classically driven curriculum?
Curriculum. Have a teacher who's open to it.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, as a teacher, be able to work it into the schedule. Some of the finest high school jazz bands I ever heard rehearse during 0 hour.
Okay.
They show up before school.
Yeah.
They play after school.
Yeah.
They just do it. I love the young musicians who are, they come in, they're ready to go. Let's hit it. I've been working on this all week long. So where do they find time? How they do it? Self-motivation,
yes,
you know, and just having a teacher who gets it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I know a lot of teachers, like I was meeting with a bunch of string teachers who really truly want to work improv into their curriculum. You know, they really want to, but they struggle to see how to do it consistently when, at least from what they told me, when they don't have the extra time to add something extra. So is there a way they can kind of fit it into a warm-up or a,
Why not? And it doesn't have to be jazz improvisation.
Great, true.
Know, what are you working on right now?
Yeah.
Put it together. You know, you mentioned ORF earlier in our conversation, and I love how the ORF approach takes improvisation, because you have your bar percussion, you're playing pentatonics, the bad bars, the bad notes, so to say, I use the term lightly there, are removed. They're actually taken off
That's
the instrument,
right.
So every note they have is correct.
Yeah.
And the kids are just allowed to be free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And actually, you hear good music when
you
that
do.
Goes on.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I know. I love watching general music teachers and the kids when they go from, just learning how to play the ostinati and then going to the improvisation. They're so proud.
They're proud.
They're so proud. And they've truly created something.
And they sound good.
They do.
They sound good. So they're developing their knowledge base in an appropriate fashion, because they are provided with challenge within their framework. They can do it. So it's not like the band is cooking at 220 beats a minute and all of a sudden, boom, There's the chord changes. Go.
Yeah.
That's enough to turn someone off for a lifetime.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Set them up for success.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Set them up for success. There was a wonderful program. I used to teach for the Ann Arbor Public Schools in Ann Arbor, Michigan. What a great town. What a great school district. They value their fine arts. Community High School was an alternative high school in that city. And I remember the gentleman, he has since retired, but he set up a very good jazz program there that was combo-based. And he must have received his degree from North Texas because he'd have the 1 o'clock band, the 2 o'clock band, and they would meet at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock, just like I believe legend has it North Texas does it. But he would work with small combos every week. And everyone had a chance to solo. I do have some of the recordings. They were just absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
A real model program.
Yeah.
So different ways to approach it. Now, that is an extreme. He had the time, he had the support, and he was able to do it.
Sure.
For most band directors, we're lucky just to have a big band.
Yes.
And what you find in the high school big bands is you usually have a couple good soloists because they study privately.
Okay.
Which is always good.
Right.
Which is always good. You need that. But I believe we're not doing our job if we're not teaching improvisation to the whole group.
I have to agree. I think that's really true. It's a key part of, you know, what makes music a creative.
Creative.
Activity.
Why do jazz?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's a different approach to music.
It is. Well, and I love that, like, you know, the kids really do have the freedom. Once, like you said, once you set them up with the skills that they need, the theory background.
Right. Theory and however you're approaching it, but set them up for success.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so setting them up for success and setting us up for success, one of the things I personally struggle with is selecting literature.
Right.
I, you know, where do you go to select literature to do jazz? And especially for those of us that are in non-jazz ensembles, typically you don't think of orchestra or even choir as being a jazz ensemble necessarily. Where do you get literature? Where can we turn to for resources?
Where we go anywhere nowadays?
Okay.
The internet.
Yeah.
Right? It's great if you can find a place where you can actually go in and look at the music. That's why I love conferences.
Yes.
Because the vendors are out there with the music. And yes, I look at the charts. I look at the melodies. I look at what's going on. But then I'm also looking at the chord changes.
Okay.
Know your students, right?
Yeah.
Is this appropriate? And here's my big question. Is there music out there being written for beginning improvisers? Right?
Right.
Hopefully there is stuff out there that is appropriate.
Well, and I will say as a string teacher, I don't think, at least in my knowledge, I don't think there's much at all being written that is really conducive for that. In fact, most of the time when I have the kids improvise, it is a piece where I have taken it and modified it.
Sure.
So that there's a spot where they can improvise.
So we also need writing and arranging in the undergraduate curriculum so the teachers could be writing and arranging.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? But we're fortunate today. We're in the golden age. There is so much at our fingertips. There is so much available on the web. There is so much music out there. Change it.
Yeah.
What can we do? How do I simplify it?
Yeah.
How do I make it more complex? All depending on your group. Know your students.
Yeah.
And choose the music based on your students' abilities.
Awesome.
Right?
Yes.
If I got a couple students in the group who study privately and can really play, I'm going to choose songs to feature them.
Yeah.
And then I also want songs where everyone gets a chance.
Absolutely.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, so speaking of everyone getting a chance, how do you, like in these band programs, that they're like 60 kids sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure every kid gets a chance to improvise? Or does it take days? What are your suggestions for those people?
Make it work. You know, I like to start, everybody plays at the same time.
Great.
Right. Okay, now who feels comfortable?
Yeah.
Who feels comfortable to take a solo? Not everyone's going to raise their
hand.
And those that, you know, you could have an embarrassment of riches till they all get to the point where they all want to play and absolutely. They all want to get into it, but they get better.
Yes.
And they get better and they get better. So, you know, keep them with some good blues or some good modal stuff that allows them to work within their parameters.
Yeah.
Yeah, get comfortable and then increase the complexity as they develop.
Great.
Make time.
Yeah.
Do it. And it's interesting, you get into the intrinsic motivation and you'll have these kids doing it on their own. Why teach improvisation? Because it's an art form. If they can really learn how to do it and do it well, I promise you they'll be doing it for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Right? One of the true tragedies with instrumental music in our schools, great programs and we teach and they learn the literature and they get it and it's fun. And what happens after they graduate from high school?
I know. They quit.
Yeah.
That's it.
How many Bach Stradivarius trumpets are sitting in closets throughout the United States? And if we can get them into these art forms and performing this kind of music, they're going to continue playing.
I agree.
Right.
That's one of my biggest concerns with public school, well, school music, period.
Right, and it's not a criticism for sure. It's just a realization.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think you're right. I think that with something like a jazz combo or like fiddle music or anything where they improvise, you know, they don't have to have the J.W. Pepper score with them.
Absolutely not.
Right?
Right.
They can find music just about anywhere.
And they can continue learning after graduation.
Yeah.
You know, the instruction on YouTube is excellent.
Yeah.
That's where I found the people I'm working with now is on the internet.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm just so glad to be in this part of the country, the Washington, D.C. area, Fairfax, where there is a place for people like us. You can just play. One of the problems in academia and certain parts of the country, unless you're a real high-level player, there's no place.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I know
it's very difficult.
Yes.
And I just want to encourage people, get together and play.
Yes. I so agree with that. Actually, some of my favorite experiences with kids are the kids that they just play with their family members for fun.
Ah, yes.
And they're the ones that continue on after high school. They always are the ones where it's either with their families or this is so cute. These two girls would call each other on the phone every night and practice together on the phone, on speakerphone. And sure enough, both of them still play today. But, you know, they also learned how to improvise and they learned how to play all kinds of different music, you know, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hark back to days of the garage bands.
Yeah.
You know, kids in every neighborhood had a band, and they practiced in their garage and work on some rock and roll. Learn your minor pentatonic scale, and you can do an awful lot with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, so, okay, your biggest recommendation for, like, classical players is to just go join a jazz group and listen to jazz. Is that kind of what I'm getting?
And if you like jazz, listen to it.
Yeah.
And then find people who are like-minded.
Yeah.
Get together. Jazz is a social thing.
Yeah.
It's about meeting people. It's about playing for people. Go find the people. And for years, I would use the Ebersold play-alongs. And I would just practice at home alone in my living room. And it was great.
Yeah.
I find it to be good therapy, actually, to practice like that. And I did it for years. But I never got better.
Yeah.
And now that I'm actually out playing with people again, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
So when you would teach jazz to your students, let's say in a regular ensemble, like it's not a jazz-specific ensemble, would you recommend starting with just kind of one piece to prepare for a concert and pull it along with,
Pull it along.
Okay.
You have other resources, use other resources.
Yeah.
Gear it towards a performance for sure.
Yeah.
But make sure it's a learning experience. Make sure it's fun. It's not teaching to a test.
Yeah.
Okay. There has to be growth and development. Yeah, we're going to perform for the people, but let's not make this a big pressure thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, jazz should be fun.
Yeah.
And I've spent plenty of time at the open mic sessions, and I know some of that stuff can get pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And I just think in the schools, let's keep it friendly.
Yes.
And the thing is, if they enjoy it, they'll come back. Mm-hmm. In secondary music, it's a great job in that if the students don't want to be there, they just won't be there.
Right.
But those who are there are there for a reason. So if you can light a fire under these students, metaphorically speaking, get them playing, have them experience success, then the internal motivation kicks in. Then they're showing up at 6 a.m. and like, hey, let's rehearse before rehearsal.
Yeah.
And things like this. That's how I like to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, as you're talking, I'm thinking about some of my students that I've gotten them to improvise.
Good.
And I'm really excited and we're getting ready for a concert.
Sure.
And they have written down their solo.
Oh.
How do you feel about this? And what are some recommendations for the kids that are like, I have to write it down. It was so good when I did it in class. What are your thoughts?
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
And I was guilty of it myself.
Okay.
But then again, I had no one really teaching me how to improvise.
Sure.
So I would write out a solo. I would say get a teacher who gets it. And get it to, the funny thing is, if you transcribe Charlie Parker's solos, he's playing the same thing over and over and over again because his knowledge base is developed. If you're just reading out a written solo, you're not developing the knowledge base. You're just continuing to read the music. So what I do is prior to the concert, I get them playing and I get them improvising every day. So they're doing something different. So when it is time to hit the concert, they're not looking at changes that are beyond them. They should feel comfortable, and that's when the real playing comes out.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I know. Yeah. I've had that so many times where the kids
writing it out.
I have to write it out. And it cracks me up because I'm like you.
Yeah.
I want to as well. If I did
I've
something
done
good.
It. I've,
yeah.
And when I was in high school.
Okay, yeah.
And don't do it.
Yeah.
Just improvise. That's what it's all about.
Great. Okay, another big question, mm-hmm. and this may be an ignorant question, but when I see jazz groups perform, there isn't really a conductor usually, or if there is one, they're not a typical conductor in the way that I'm used to. They snap. And they just kind of stand at the side and just so chill, and I love it. Is this how to conduct a jazz group? Is there a specific way to conduct a jazz group?
Well, I just like to let them play.
Okay.
You start them?
Okay.
And you cut them off. Now, it all depends on the music. The conductor is necessary. I remember my father used to ask me, why even have a conductor? I'm like, well, what if the music needs to slow down? Mm-hmm. Who cuts the group up? And he got it. It depends.
Okay.
But when you're playing the large jazz ensemble, they feed off each other.
Yeah.
And as a director, you should be there. You're front and center. You do count them off. Get out of the way.
Okay.
Let them play.
And when the students finish soloing, mm-hmm. in the string world, I find that the audience doesn't know what to do. So do you prep the audience and tell them, hey, when the students are done with their solo, clap for them? Do you start clapping? How do you train your audience if they're not a jazz, because I think that the kids, once they start to listen to jazz, they know to expect the applause after their solo.
Well, if it's a good solo, the audience should react, right? I will clap.
Okay.
And I hope the audience is following. That's that hidden curriculum we talk about.
Yes.
You have students, they don't understand. In certain cases, you're not supposed to clap between movements of a classical piece.
Right.
On the other hand, you're supposed to clap after a solo, mm-hmm. after a jazz solo. So, yeah, it's just like teaching the people for any other type of music.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, yes, I agree. I always struggled with that, though. I thought, surely they'll know what to do, but they don't. Especially in the string world, the audience is, because like you said, we actually have trained them at that point.
Sure.
By the time the kids are in high school, they know not to clap between movements.
And put a note in the program.
Oh, that's a easy.
Put a note in the program.
That's a great idea.
You know, your students, your children, your sons, your daughters have been working hard at this. Mm-hmm. Please show your appreciation. This is a difficult art form. Mm-hmm. And please applaud after a solo. Show your appreciation.
That's great.
Yeah.
And if string players, mm-hmm. would you have us stand up for each solo? Mm. Or what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that's another little tiny thing where we want to do it right.
Right.
But we don't fully know always.
Normally the soloist, unless they're in keyboard, will stand or percussion. On the other hand, it's what do they feel comfortable with? You know, if you have a young student who wants to solo, but they don't feel comfortable standing up, sit.
Great.
Sit and play, you know. I want to get good, positive musical results.
Yeah.
And make it as less uptight as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We struggle with that in my world a little bit, as you know.
We all do.
But yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah. This is such great information. Do you have anything else you want to kind of share with us about why to do jazz or any other tips that are kind of lingering in your mind?
Listen to the great music. Yeah. And myself, I love listening to the legends. You know, I like Lee Morgan. I like Miles Davis. I like Chet Baker and Freddie Hubbard. But I'm also listening to the contemporaries out there. Esperanza Spalding just won her Grammy Award. What a beautiful thing, right?
Amazing.
You know,
yes.
And I'm saddened by the recent passing of Roy Hargrove. Who was just this wonderful soloist who could tell a story with his instrument. Dante Winslow out there. Listen to the contemporaries. Who's playing the good music nowadays? Be in on it. But listen to all kinds of music. I myself, I'm going to see the NSO perform Mahler 5 next month. And I'm so excited. So I will listen to classical. I will listen to, I've been listening to the Beatles again. I can always pull that catalog out. I like old rock and roll. Mm-hmm. I like avant-garde. I like anything that's strange. I like good jazz. Listen to it all. Appreciate it all.
Great. Oh, that's great. Well, that's really exciting. Well, one final thing I would love for you to do is talk a little bit about, for our audience members, most of us are music teachers or music ed majors. I know we've got a Master's of Music Ed that's online now that's getting ready to be started. And so any of our listeners could access that from my understanding. Would you mind telling us a little bit why send your students to major in undergrad music ed at Mason and why try our master's program?
Well, I'll tell you, undergraduate music ed majors, come to Mason. We are in the heart of it all. We are located here in the Washington, D.C. suburbs in the middle of Fairfax County. And you come here, you get to study with the best teachers out there in the Fairfax County Public Schools, Loudoun Public Schools, Prince William Public Schools. I find the students, so many of them are so great. They practice all the time. They come from great families. This is a great place to learn. Mason is a good school. We embrace a strong curriculum where we teach you how to teach. And if you are a current teacher out there looking for your master's degree, I did create the online music education degree. A lot of schools are doing it right now. Mason has our own. It's been up and running for the past year. Interestingly enough, I've had 8 people over the past week reach out to me, you know, interested. But it is a wonderful degree where if you're in any part of the world, you can come and do it within the comfort of your own home. It's very practical based. How can I apply this in my classroom? But we also take an intellectual tilt to it. So you're going to take the research class, and I'm going to say, okay, what is the problem that exists in your classroom? How do you want to solve it? And let's introduce research as a means to solving that problem. You are going to study philosophy. Why? So you can inform practice and help with your advocacy efforts. Why should music be in the schools? And then we have a whole slew of other courses that just help you in the teaching and learning process. We offer ORF and CODI hybrids, so where you can study online throughout the school year and then come out to Washington, D.C. a couple weeks every summer and study ORF or Kodai, and more to come.
Great.
I welcome any and everybody.
Awesome. Yeah. And if people want to get in touch with you, maybe they want to bring you out to help them, you know, get Please. Started in jazz. Like, how should they reach out to you? Is there a place you'd recommend that they go?
Best way to get a hold of me, get on the Mason School of Music website. Great. My email address is there. I do my best to answer my emails in a timely manner. I would love to hear from everybody.
Great. And that's gmu.edu. And you
Correct.
Can easily search him, and I'll put links in the blog. Thanks for tuning in to Hashtag Music Ed Love this week. Thanks to all of those who continue to hit subscribe and leave reviews. Your feedback is immensely helpful to us. If you haven't already, we would love to hear from you. Feel free to find us on social media at Music Ed Love, or to drop me an email at angela.ammerman@gmail.com. We hope that this week you will be able to sprinkle a little stardust on all your students, uncover the greatness within a few more young humans, and send those stars through the stratosphere. Happy musicking, friends!